2 weeks' notice. Part 2. Merlin very gingerly lifted the steaming mug of coffee to his lips. He found that the less he moved, the less likely it would be that the army of angry rhinoceroses in his skull resumed their assault on his brain. Merlin! Arthur shouted from inside his office, and Merlin jumped, sending half his coffee down the front of his shirt. The rhinoceros in his right temple snorted disgruntledly. God, what now? Merlin muttered, half-heartedly scrubbing at the stain on his shirt. Arthur was being worse than usual today. Merlin knew enough about Arthur to know that he typically reserved this particular level of prattliness for times when he had especially difficult meetings with his father, or for that one time that he'd been unable to avoid the run-in with Sophia from accounting. In any case, Merlin knew that Arthur tended to deal with unwanted emotional stress by making everyone around him just as miserable as he was. Merlin was used to suffering Arthur's occasional tantrums, but his current raging hangover had severely shortened his patience. It was made even worse by the fact that Merlin had caught Arthur staring at him several times earlier that day, eyeing him with a level of scrutiny that suggested he was calculating the exact moment he expected Merlin to keel over atop his desk. Odder still was the fact that whenever Arthur deigned to speak to Merlin, he refused to look Merlin in the eyes. And to top it off, Merlin still hadn't found time to have his morning coffee. Merlin! Arthur shouted again. I'm not paying you to sit around on your skinny arse. If I have to call you again, I'm taking it out of your pay. Merlin groaned and shuffled his way into Arthur's office, mug cradled protectively between his palms like a security blanket. Or a shield. Yes, Your Majesty? Arthur threw him another of those looks that seemed to scream, I'm not looking! And Merlin restrained the urge to beat him about the head with his own stapler and tell him to stop being so bloody cryptic already. It wasn't like Arthur not to tell Merlin what was bothering him, even if what was bothering him happened to be Merlin. Actually, on those occasions he seemed especially eager to let Merlin know about it. The company gathering is coming up next month, so you'll be helping Morgana to plan it this year. I'll have her forward the first list of tasks for you to complete by the end of the week. I also need you to pick up my new suit from the tailors, and there's a stack of files in my inbox that need to be copied. And for God's sake, do try not to injure yourself or the copy machine this time. The brief pause in Arthur's rapid-fire list of tasks was the only hint that Merlin wouldn't like what he had to say next. And I won't be able to make it to lunch today. Merlin's head snapped up in surprise. Arthur hadn't missed a lunch meeting since, well, since they'd started having lunch together, during Merlin's second week as Arthur's assistant. Merlin felt his brows knit together in concern as he asked, Is everything all right? Of course everything's all right, Arthur snapped, exasperated. But he still refused to look directly at Merlin. He rummaged through the files spread out on his desk and said, Believe it or not, I do have more important things to do than babysit you during our lunch hour. You'll just have to survive without me for a few days. Merlin cast a narrow-eyed glare at the side of Arthur's face. However will I manage, he replied flatly. He left without waiting for Arthur's dismissal, squaring his shoulders as he took the stack of files and prepared to do battle with his arch nemesis, the copy machine. Merlin knew whatever was bothering Arthur had to be something more upsetting than usual, but he tried not to worry about it for now. He had learned early on that Arthur's temper burned hot, but it burned fast, and he'd best let him have a snit and work it out of his system. It might take a day or two, but eventually things would get back to normal. The venue for this year's company gathering was Morgana's idea. Arthur should have known it would be a disaster the moment he sent Merlin over with his list of suggestions, and she replied, Not another banquet, Arthur. All we ever do is host banquets. If I ever see another roast pheasant, I can't be held accountable for my actions. So, instead, she had come up with the brilliant plan that they have the company gathering at the Isle of Avalon, a video arcade for grown-ass men and women who felt that behaving like 12-year-old hooligans on a sugar rush was acceptable public behaviour. Arthur promptly blamed Marilyn. Arthur's juvenile delinquent of an assistant was currently across the crowded arcade, inexplicably beating Gawain's arse at Wii boxing and having a bloody fantastic time if Arthur were to judge by the bouts of enthusiastic flailing going on. Arthur hated the fact that he could pick out Marilyn's laughter ringing through the casino-like noise as if he were standing right next to him. Despite the fact that Marilyn had clearly not remembered that night, Arthur had decided it would be better to create a bit of professional distance between them. He wasn't sure if that night was simply an alcohol and loneliness-induced mistake, or if Marilyn had somehow developed feelings. Either way, Arthur knew enough about Marilyn to know that even if he did want a tumble with his assistant, which he did not, he wouldn't be able to keep it casual, because Marilyn didn't do anything casual. Everything with Marilyn was one extreme or the other. Arthur wasn't opposed to the occasional drunken fumble with a co-worker, but he knew from experience that office relationships were doomed to crash and burn in a truly spectacular fashion. He'd learned the hard way with Sophia. In any case, Arthur was willing to take responsibility for having let this thing with Marilyn go too far. He'd allowed Morgana to goad him with advice on bonding, and the next thing he knew, he was offering to save ugly brown butterflies from starvation and affectionately teasing Marilyn about his bleary-eyed, zombie-like demands for morning coffee. If he'd maintained the proper boss-assistant relationship, he wouldn't be in this predicament. Nope, the only solution was to pull back to a respectable distance. What Arthur hadn't counted on, however, was how difficult it would be. He'd gotten used to having Marilyn around. He never realised how often he'd felt Marilyn's constant presence until suddenly he was actively seeking reasons to stay away. He never realised how often his eyes sought Marilyn out in a crowd until he was forcing his feet not to carry him across the room towards his assistant, meaning he was stuck here, trying very hard to ignore the way he felt a little off balance without Marilyn at his side. Arthur watched as Marilyn did a completely ridiculous little victory dance and clapped Gawain on the back, who promptly stepped aside to let Galahad battle the champion. Arthur quietly stomped on the urge to go over there and challenge Marilyn to a game of wee fencing, just to wipe that idiotic grin off his face. Marilyn was really terrible with a sword, even if the sword was technically imaginary. Trying to distract his attention from the spectacle his assistant was making of himself, Arthur pulled out his new mobile and attempted to get an update on the market forecasts. Word that Mercia Incorporated was courting merger deals with several companies had yet to hit the press, but Arthur knew that once it did, the market would go haywire, and he wanted to stay on top of any changes. However, once Arthur tried to log on to his phone, the screen gave a strange sort of flash and blacked out. Arthur cursed his luck. His new phone was an incredibly expensive but untested prototype, and as such, some of the more obnoxious bugs had yet to be worked out. It was so new, it didn't even have a model name. But Arthur had taken to calling it the Merlin due to its stubborn refusal to do what Arthur wanted most of the time. He was jabbing angrily at the buttons when he heard a familiar and entirely unwelcome voice call out with a cheerful, "Hello, Pratt Dragon!" Arthur turned and glowered, offering the only greeting he felt appropriate given the circumstances. "Well, what the hell are you doing here? This is a private party for employees of the Pendragon Corporation." Will's grin was entirely too self-satisfied for Arthur's comfort. His suspicions that Will was up to something were confirmed when Will replied, "Bayard invited me." Arthur steadfastly didn't scowl further. Arthur had invited Bayard to the company gathering in hopes that it would foster a relationship between Mercia Incorporated and the Pendragon Corporation. Will's company, Ealdor Enterprises, was one of the companies being courted by Mercia Incorporated for merger deals alongside the Pendragon Corporation. Apparently, Bayard appreciated my suggestion that a little direct competition could open his eyes about what kind of people he's considering handing his company over to. Arthur felt his jaw clench. Will's company was still small, but it had shown impressive growth. And with Will fighting dirty, there was the possibility that Bayard could be swayed, especially if Will tried to play up the morality angle. Will had founded Ealdor Enterprises on a platform of ethical business practices when Will's father had been forced to take the fall for Enron-like levels of corporate corruption. It hadn't had anything to do with the Pendragon Corporation, of course, but that didn't stop Will from lumping all companies, besides his own, together as selfish and immoral. Arthur resented it. Maybe some of his father's business decisions had been questionable, but they were always motivated by looking out for the company and its employees. And Arthur loathed the implication that he personally was anything but honourable in his business decisions. Naturally, he and Will had hated each other from the moment they had met. "So tell me," Will said, voice dripping with smarmy sarcasm, "what does a soul go for these days at the Pendragon Corporation? I'm sure Bayard is dying to know." At that moment, Arthur was sorely tempted to kill two very annoying birds with one stone and shove his misbehaving phone down Will's throat. Then, just as Arthur was sure his night couldn't get any worse, he caught sight of his assistant rushing up to them and he groaned. "Arthur!" Merlin called, cheeks flushed pink with childish excitement and probably more than a little alcohol from the open bar. And here a complete and utter disaster. "Arthur, there's this game, you've got to try it. You stick your head in this thing, and it's got handles, and you spin round, and it's like you're in this machine gun turret, and you shoot down enemy bombers, and they explode right in front of your face." And Arthur couldn't quite stamp out the hint of fond exasperation in his tone as he said, "You do realise you're not actually 12 years old, right? And aren't you a pacifist?" Merlin froze in the middle of a rather interesting contortion of limbs that Arthur assumed was meant to demonstrate the contraption's workings. He blinked once, then said in a pout no man should have been able to pull off, "It wouldn't kill you to have some fun once in a while. Your new boy toy's right, Pratt Dragon. It might do you good to pull that bloody great stick from up your arse before it has to be surgically removed." Merlin suddenly turned towards Will as if just now noticing there was a third party to the conversation. He looked between Arthur and Will with a warily raised eyebrow, and Arthur sighed. He supposed introductions really couldn't be avoided. "Will, this is Merlin, my incompetent assistant. Merlin, this is Will, my mortal enemy." Will rolled his eyes and offered Merlin a handshaking greeting. Keyword being mortal. "I at least hope he pays you well to do all the jobs as mere mortals have to do for ourselves. Although if not, I suppose the benefits make up for it." Arthur choked on his drink and Merlin sputtered like an outboard motor. Arthur wondered if it was too late to warn Merlin about Will's tendency to rile people up by stating whatever outlandish and inflammatory things fell out of his otherwise useless brain. "What?" Merlin finally managed, and Arthur doubted the flush in his cheeks was still due to the alcohol. "It's not like that." When Arthur recovered enough from his choking fit, he added, "You think I... with Merlin? Have you gone completely mental?" Will shrugged. "Never figured you to be the discriminating kind." Arthur may have had some very fuzzy memories of a very drunk night when they'd first met back at Oxford, involving some possible groping, followed by a surprisingly solid fist connecting painfully with his jaw, but he's tried very hard never to dig too deep into the events of that particular night. Clearing his throat, Arthur replied haughtily, I learned from my first mistake with an idiotic dolt with more ideals than brains. I don't plan to make it again. After a beat of stony, infuriating silence, Will turned his attention to Marilyn and asked deadpan, So, honestly, you're just withholding sex until you get your raise, then? Marilyn, Arthur was surprised to see, looked furious enough to murder an entire litter of kittens. Right now, there's not enough money in the world for me to get on my knees for either one of you bastards. With that, he stomped off towards the bar. Arthur was more than half tempted to go after him, either to steer Marilyn clear of any further alcohol consumption, because the man was a horrid lightweight, or to figure out what the bloody hell Marilyn was so upset about. But that would have defeated the purpose of keeping his professional distance, so he simply clenched his jaw and rooted himself to the spot. At Arthur's side, Will said cheerily, I like him. You haven't managed to kill a soul yet. He continued to watch Marilyn stalk away through the crowd with a thoughtful look on his face. Fantastic arse, too. I can see why you hired him. Arthur's jaw was clenched so tightly he swore his teeth were moments away from shattering as he ground out. Bugger off, Will, before I have security throw you out. Arthur decided the best method of distraction for the rest of the night would be to actually do his job and woo Bayard with a mixture of entertainment and shop talk. Bayard seemed fairly amenable all evening, although that might have been due more to the steady flow of free alcohol than the way Arthur kept slyly pointing out the benefits of a future merger. Arthur was steadfastly focused on performing his duty for the company when Morgana sidled up beside him with a smile that belied the nervous tension in her eyes. She lowered her voice to a level only Arthur could hear and said, We've got a bit of a situation. There could only be one situation, Morgana would come to warn him about, and Arthur was painfully aware that he hadn't spotted Marilyn anywhere in at least the last hour. Not that he'd been looking for him or anything. Arthur manfully refrained from rolling his eyes and pitched his voice to match Morgana's. Dear God, what's he gotten himself into now? Morgana's eyes flicked silently across the room. He easily identified Marilyn playing some dancing game with another figure that Arthur couldn't quite make out in the dim orange glow let off by the arcade games. He was stomping and hopping about and flapping his arms like some sort of deranged attempt at flight. But other than that, he looked fine. Arthur didn't know what kind of situation Morgana could have meant. If she wanted Arthur to rush over and save Marilyn from making a complete fool of himself in public, she clearly didn't understand that things like this were a near daily occurrence as far as Marilyn was concerned. Arthur considered telling Morgana to sod off and let Marilyn make a spectacle of himself in peace. But then he saw Marilyn pull some sort of difficult-looking move that sent him tipping backwards and nearly off the podium. The figure at Marilyn's side shot out a hand and caught onto the small of Marilyn's back, steadying him. Arthur's brief flash of relief for Marilyn's safety was overshadowed by the sudden, violent urge to rip the man's arm from its socket. Then the figure turned and Arthur caught a glimpse of Will's profile, smiling at Marilyn and not removing his bloody hand. And Arthur's rage level went from dismember to kill. He excused himself from Bayard's side, citing urgent company business, and then stomped across the room to deal with whatever the hell Will thought he was trying to pull. As Arthur drew closer, it became blindingly apparent that Marilyn was far too drunk to even stand upright, let alone wobble around on some dancing game's footpads like a large, gangly bird having a stroke. What the hell do you think you're doing? Arthur! Marilyn exclaimed, apparently delighted to see him, despite the fact that only an hour ago he'd stormed away from Arthur in a huff. Arthur put his hands on his hips and felt disturbingly like a put-upon parent. Marilyn, calm down from there. I'm taking you home. Will sneered. He's not your dog. You can't order him around and expect him to obey. You keep your fat head out of this, Arthur warned. Merlin leaned over the railing and slurred in a very serious tone of voice. Arthur, you shouldn't be so hard on Will. He's not as bad as he seems at first. Kind of like you, actually. Well, Arthur tried to figure out if it was a compliment or an insult. Or a bit of both. The next round of the game started. Merlin gave a whoop of joy and was just about to once again start hopping about on the footpads like a jumping bean dropped in a bottle of tequila when Arthur decided he'd had enough. He reached out to grab Merlin's wrist, but he apparently had underestimated the level of uncoordination that even Merlin could achieve. Merlin spun in a wobbly arc, twisting his feet beneath him and promptly toppling off the podium and into Arthur's arms. Merlin just hung there for a moment, looking as if he was vaguely trying to determine which way was up. But Arthur's brain was too stunned to move past the thought of Merlin in his arms. It should have been an incredibly awkward position. And it was. But it was also rather pleasant. Arthur could feel the hot flush of Merlin's skin underneath the crisp cotton of his shirt. He was surprised by how far his arms were able to wrap around Merlin's scrawny chest. He pressed his hands down a little harder and counted the ribs under his palms, silently wondering if Merlin was somehow managing to starve himself with his ridiculous vegan diet. Merlin's face was only centimetres away, and Arthur watched as Merlin's eyes cleared and his lips pursed slightly in a confused frown. Merlin's hands tightened marginally on Arthur's shoulders, his thumbs tucked snugly under the fold of Arthur's collar. Arthur, what? Arthur released him abruptly and stepped back. And though he didn't exactly mean to shove Merlin away, he watched as Merlin stumbled backwards into Morgana, and was barely saved from toppling to the floor by Morgana's scarily fast, one-handed grip. Arthur couldn't quite bring himself to feel bad about this resulting in half the Cosmo in Morgana's other hand spilling onto her new shoes, despite the livid glare she shot his way. Disdainfully smoothing out invisible wrinkles from where he'd had Merlin pressed up against his chest, Arthur mocked. I know coordination's not one of your strong suits, but really, do you have any natural talents? Merlin righted himself with more than a little help from Morgana, and a bright flush rose to his cheeks. Let's see, I'm not naturally rude or insensitive. So that's a no then, Arthur deadpanned. I have talents, Merlin protested hotly. I can tie a cherry stem with my tongue. He promptly grabbed the cherry from Morgana's drink and popped it into his mouth, presumably to demonstrate. Arthur belatedly remembered where a discussion of Merlin's talents had led them last time, and decided he needed to get Merlin out of here before things got out of hand. Grabbing Merlin's arm in a bruising grip, he began hauling him towards the doors. Okay, that's it. We're leaving. You really are a bloody caveman, aren't you? I may have always figured you for an arrogant arse, but I never figured you for being the type to drag someone off too drunk to say no. Arthur cast an incredulous look over his shoulder, because what the hell was Will on about? Did Will think he was actually defending Merlin's honour? Go back to your game, Will. Maybe this time try to find a little less hapless partner. Do you think you could do better? Arthur raised an eyebrow, because surely Will wasn't serious. It was a game designed for preteen girls. I know I could. Will's response didn't miss a beat. Prove it. Arthur didn't even notice the crowd that had gathered until they all seemed to settle into a shocked hush. No one issued a challenge to Arthur Pendragon, unless they had some kind of foolhardy death wish. Arthur narrowed his eyes, then propped Merlin up against the Mrs. Pac-Man and stepped onto the small podium. The hush of the crowd immediately erupted into excited chatter. Bring it on, you sodding git. Will's smile was unbearably smug. Brave words, Prat Dragon. Have you ever even done this before? Arthur's condescension was scathing. Believe it or not, some of us have more important things to do with our lives than sit around playing a child's game. It shouldn't have been possible, but Will's smile actually got wider. Right then, we'll start you out on something easy first. Merlin was playing at the standard level, so Arthur grudgingly agreed to keep it set the same. Prepare to have your arse served to you on a silver platter, Arthur said, and then they began. The whole thing was ridiculously easy. The steps were fairly repetitive and predictable, and given that Arthur had taken a lifetime of private fencing classes, he took to the rhythm of the music the same as he took to the rhythm of the thrust and parry. The only times he faltered were whenever he looked over to check Will's score, which usually resulted in a missed step, sometimes two. For the most part, however, Arthur had to refrain from rolling his eyes at the simplicity of it all. Then the final scores were plastered across the respective screens, and Arthur's jaw hit the floor along with everyone else in the crowd. I lost? The game doesn't lie, Will said, clapping him genially on the shoulder. I hope you like the taste of failure, Prat Dragon. You'd best get used to it. Now, if you'll excuse me. He trailed off and flicked a glance over Arthur's shoulder. Arthur turned to see Merlin still sulking where Arthur had left him. When Arthur turned back, Will was eyeing Merlin like the prize in one of those claw machines just before it dropped down the chute and into his waiting hands. Arthur was overwhelmed with the sudden desire to punch Will's weaselly face in and shout, "Stay the hell away from him!" when Will moved to step off the podium. Arthur settled for crushing Will's bicep in his grip and growling. That was just a practice. Let's do this for real this time. Will winced a little at Arthur's fingers digging into his arm, but his grin stayed plastered to his face as he said, I'd love to wipe the floor with you again, but... You won't, Arthur said, deadly serious. Now that he knew the stakes, he wouldn't lose. He may not want Merlin for himself, but he'd be damned if he let this smarmy bastard get his grubby mitts all over him. Arthur grinned, baring his teeth. Winner takes all. Will's resolve visibly faltered. Arthur's grip tightened. If Will backed out now, he was a coward, and Arthur would lose what little grudging respect he had for Will as a businessman. After a moment, Will jutted out his chin in what Arthur supposed was meant to be his game face and said, All right, you're on. They started by resetting the levels. Arthur upped his level to difficult. Will skilled and matched him. Arthur hesitated a moment, then raised his eyebrow in challenge and moved up to maniac. Will's foot hovered over the controls for a heavy moment while the crowd held its collective breath. Then it settled back to his side. The crowd let out a collective sigh, either of relief or disappointment. Arthur couldn't tell. He was too busy smiling thinly at his preliminary victory. This time, Arthur was ready. He never let his eyes leave his own screen. The steps started out easy enough, but after a few seconds, Arthur became aware that it was only just a warm-up. Arthur had always excelled at footwork in his fencing classes, but this was something else entirely. A sparring partner usually needed to stop and rest every so often, if only for a moment. But Arthur's feet flew over the control pads in a constant flurry of motion as he battled the game. The steps so convoluted he found himself contorting in all sorts of strange ways as he tried to keep up. His hands cut through the air as he desperately fought to keep his balance, and he suddenly had a greater understanding of the deranged flapping he'd witnessed from Merlin earlier. He felt a thin layer of sweat soak into his hair, around his face, and into the collar of his shirt. The crowd let out occasional cheers or shouts at the more difficult manoeuvres, but he remained focused and watched his scores climb. Will could not win. Arthur refused to accept the possibility. The image of Will's hand on the small of Merlin's back and Merlin's besotted smile flashed through his mind. And Arthur growled and attacked the footpads with increasing ferocity. It was almost a shock when the song ended and Arthur's feet stuttered to a halt. His knees felt a bit wobbly and he grabbed onto a handrail at the side for support. Then the screen flashed out the results, declaring Arthur the unequivocal champion. And he couldn't help the victorious shout. He turned towards Will, fully prepared to gloat, only to find that Will had somehow disappeared. Arthur thought for a moment that he would have to reevaluate his assessment of Will's cowardice, but when he turned towards where he'd left Merlin waiting for him, he saw that Merlin was gone too. Arthur immediately suspected foul play. He shot a look over the crowd's heads and instantly recognised the unruly mop weaving its way through the mob, supported by Will at his side like some conquering hero. Arthur saw red. He brushed past Morgana and the rest of the crowd virtually parted before him like the Red Sea, falling over each other to get out of his path. "You coward!" Arthur shouted, hauling Will around by the scruff of his neck. Will replied with more than a little frustration and sarcasm as he said, "Well, you looked like you were having such a good time. I didn't want to spoil it by wiping the floor with your pompous arse again." Arthur didn't loosen his grip. "Admit it! I was winning and you chickened out." Will scoffed indignantly. "You weren't winning." "Yes, I was. Merlin, you were watching. Back me up. Tell him I was winning." Merlin, however, seemed quite content to stare at them vacantly and chew on the inside of his cheek. "Merlin!" Will gave him a strange look. "He seems a little busy right now, actually." Arthur's temper was reaching heretofore uncharted levels. "Busy? What are you..." But at that moment, Merlin reached up and pulled the cherry stem from his mouth, holding it out proudly. "See? Told you I could do it." Arthur was fully prepared to let loose some of his encroaching rage, but then he got a good look and all his anger dissolved in the face of sheer, dumbfounded awe. "Is that a double knot? How could you manage that? You can barely stand up right now." Merlin just grinned beautifully. "I'm magic." Will's voice was even more amazed than Arthur's. "That's really impressive, actually." A deaf, dumb and blind man could have caught the speculative gleam in Will's eyes. But because this was Merlin, he simply increased the wattage of his smile and replied with an earnest, "Thanks." Arthur grabbed hold of Merlin's arm and unceremoniously began dragging him away towards the exit. By the time the lift doors opened to the top floor, Arthur had Merlin over his shoulder because the bloody idiot had apparently lost all ability to stand under his own power. Morgana, who had joined them after the fiasco in the arcade, went ahead of them and opened doors, while a semi-conscious Merlin mumbled what Arthur gathered were disparaging comments about Merlin's view of Arthur's arse. Arthur was just grateful they made it to Merlin's bedroom without Merlin puking spectacularly down Arthur's back. Arthur flopped Merlin down on top of the mattress with a bit more force than was advisable for someone in Merlin's state, but he refused to feel guilty about that. He sat at the foot of the bed and began removing Merlin's shoes with very little finesse, grumbling angrily. "Considering you're my assistant, I spend an awful lot of time taking care of your drunken arse." Merlin didn't respond, however, as he was already well on his way to being passed out. Morgana's voice was deceptively light as she asked, "Do you think we should change his clothes?" Arthur paused with Merlin's left shoe half removed and turned to find his stepsister giving Merlin a frankly assessing gaze. Catching Arthur's look, she shrugged and said blandly, "It was only a suggestion." Arthur rolled his eyes and went back to removing Merlin's recalcitrant footwear. "If you want to make yourself useful, go fetch a glass of water and some paracetamol for the morning. I have a feeling he'll need it." Once Arthur had dropped Merlin's right shoe alongside its mate on the floor, He looked up to see Merlin watching him with bleary, glazed eyes. The calculating look on his face reminded Arthur far too much of the way he'd looked at Arthur just before the ill-advised kiss. Arthur cleared his throat and stood, grabbing a blanket from the closet, but he could feel Merlin's gaze like a warm touch on the back of his neck. "Arthur, what's wrong with me?" Merlin slurred quietly. "At present, large quantities of alcohol." Arthur unfurled the blanket and draped it over Merlin's prone form, tucking it in around his shoulders and trying desperately not to meet Merlin's eyes or realise how the action brought their faces closer together. Then Merlin reached out and wrapped long, fumbling fingers around Arthur's wrist, and that plan was shot all to hell. Merlin's eyes were glassy and earnest, his hair curled messily around his face and shining with the pale light filtering in through the window. Arthur thought, for a brief moment, that he could see what everyone else saw when they looked at Merlin and got those ridiculously soppy looks on their faces. "No, I mean, why don't you like me anymore?" Arthur froze, face close enough to see the watery moonlight reflected in Merlin's half-lidded eyes and Merlin's loose grip holding him in place. He felt like he'd been kicked in the chest. Morgana, of course, chose that very moment to come back into the room. From her position framed in the doorway, she glanced between Arthur and Merlin with her ever-discerning gaze, and an odd mixture of frustration and pity flickered across her face. She very clearly wanted to say whatever was on her mind, but in an uncharacteristic display of discretion, she instead set the water and tablets on the nightstand before quietly exiting the room. Arthur swallowed thickly. Merlin really had it all wrong, as usual. The problem wasn't that Arthur had stopped liking Merlin. It was that Arthur was just beginning to suspect that he might possibly like Merlin too much. "Go to sleep, Merlin," Arthur replied briskly, easily extricating his arm from Merlin's grasp. Merlin's eyes were already drifting shut as Arthur spoke, and by the time Arthur turned to close the door behind him, Arthur caught the glimpse of Merlin comfortably starfished across the giant mattress before the door quietly clicked shut. He leaned his forehead against the door for a half second, just long enough to heave a sigh, before he turned away and found Morgana lurking at the end of the hallway, a curious expression on her face. "If you're afraid of Merlin leaving you, then pushing him away isn't exactly the best solution." Arthur's spine stiffened. "Don't be absurd, Morgana. You've been at those Harlequin novels of yours again, haven't you?" He tried to brush past her, but she clamped a surprisingly strong hand on his arm. She looked up at him with the strange gleam in her eyes that made Arthur feel like he was seeing far more than she was letting on, and said, "You can't protect yourself forever, Arthur. It won't go away, no matter how deeply you bury it." Arthur pulled free of Morgana's grip and strode angrily towards his own room. "For once in your life, Morgana, mind your own business," he snapped furiously, "and you can let yourself out." When Merlin heard about losing the Mercia merger to Will's company, he knew Arthur would be thrashing around the office like a wounded bear. Merlin treaded lightly for most of the day, but when the sweet intern who left vegan brownies on Merlin's desk for his birthday ran out of Arthur's office in near hysterics, he decided he'd let it go on long enough. Stepping into Arthur's office, Merlin glared and said, "Is it physically impossible for you to act like a decent human being?" Arthur met his glare head on and dialed his own a few notches higher. "You can't talk to me like that. I'm your superior, and you'd do well to remember that." Merlin threw his hands up in bewildered frustration. "I've always talked to you like this. It's never bothered you before." "Yes, well, that was clearly a mistake," Arthur replied in his haughtiest tone. "I've been far too lenient with you. If I hadn't been so worried about you making a fool of yourself, I wouldn't have been forced to leave Bayard in order to make sure you didn't drown yourself in alcohol." It took several shocked moments for Arthur's words to percolate. Wait, are you trying to blame this on me? The look on Arthur's face could have lit kindling. Considering I don't recall having to haul anyone else's drunken arse up 30 floors, then yes, I'd say that means I'm talking about you. If it had been anybody but Arthur, Merlin would have recoiled from the genuine, startling anger he saw in Arthur's eyes. Maybe next time I'll just let your new best friend Will deal with you. Merlin felt his face contort in disbelief. It was true. Merlin and Will had gotten on surprisingly well despite their rocky introduction. But once Will had apologised and Merlin had opened up about his volunteer work, Will had seemed suitably impressed. If Merlin had eaten up the sparse praise like candy, it was only because he'd been suffering from its very persistent lack for quite some time. Maybe that wouldn't be such a bad idea, Merlin replied, tone deceptively calm. It would be nice to hang out with someone who thinks I'm good for something besides polishing his bloody boots. Arthur's jaw clenched. You're forbidden to associate with that git. I won't have my assistant betraying the company by aligning himself with the company's enemies. Wait, so now you're going to start telling me who I can and can't be friends with? Arthur looked on the verge of shouting something else, but then he simply turned to the files on his desk and said flatly, Get out of here, Merlin. Some of us have actual work to do today. Arthur, I said get out of my sight. Merlin choked back the words threatening to burst out of his mouth and turned, slamming the door behind him. You don't understand, Gwen. He's intolerable, and he's actually getting worse. Oh, come on, Merlin. He can't be as bad as all that. He agreed to keep some land undeveloped on the shopping centre project, didn't he? She said, her voice muffled behind the fitting room door. Well, yes, but only after he threw me in the lake. And that's not even the point. The point is that he's being an even worse arse than usual, and I've no idea why. It's all I can do every day not to stab him in the eye with my pen. I think you like him, really, she said, then added darkly, just barely loud enough for Merlin to hear. Even if you do complain about him constantly. I do not like him, Merlin countered vehemently. And if I complain about him, it's only because he's the most annoying, arrogant, selfish prat-face to ever walk the earth. Gwen's voice sing-songed melodiously through the door. Methinks you doth protest too much. Merlin hoped Gwen could feel the power of his glare even through the door. You know, you've been insufferably cheerful ever since you got engaged. If his comment came out a little sharper than he intended, he doubted Gwen noticed. Look, Merlin, maybe you just need to be patient, she continued, her voice gentle. He'll come around in time. Merlin felt his mouth twist in distaste. Gwen, I don't... His voice tailed off, unable to actually say the words. I don't have a giant crush on my priggish arse of a boss. Mostly because he knew it to be a lie. Gwen's face popped into view over the door, smiling sweetly as if she could read his thoughts. Yes, you do. And don't worry, things will work themselves out. You'll see. Merlin raised an eyebrow. She really was being intolerably blissful as of late. Like they did with Lance. Gwen's smile turned into something a bit more sheepish before she ducked behind the door. Well, no, not quite, she muttered. Gwen? Merlin was suddenly curious and a bit concerned. Is there something you need to tell me? Well, you see, I had to propose to him, actually. It's not like I'd think he wouldn't have done it himself, or that he didn't want to, because he obviously did. But he kept getting distracted and running off to Borneo to save those pygmy elephants, or off to West Africa to save that weird flower that looks like a 12-foot penis, or whatever, and I just... If I hadn't done it myself, I would have been waiting forever. Merlin could hear the self-deprecating smile in Gwen's voice without needing to see it. So maybe there's a lesson there after all. The door swung open and Gwen stepped out in a sleeveless white wedding dress, effectively stealing whatever reply Marilyn had begun to form. She fidgeted a bit with her skirts and asked, "How do I look?" Marilyn stared. She looked nervous and terrified and overwhelmingly, radiantly happy. She was undeniably glowing. "Oh, Gwen, you look beautiful." And for the first time since that phone call, Marilyn didn't feel that small, bitter pang of self-pity that had been tainting his happiness for his friend. He truly meant it, with all of his heart. Gwen smiled and took Marilyn's hand in both of hers. "Marilyn, if I hadn't taken a little initiative, I'd probably still be waiting for Lance to figure things out. Maybe all Arthur needs is a little push." Marilyn smiled and squeezed her hands. Only Gwen wouldn't think twice about listening to Marilyn prattle on about his problems while in the middle of what should rightfully be a time singularly devoted to her own happiness. "Listen, Gwen, I'm sorry I've been such a boor this last month. Not a lot of people would put up with me like you did, and well, just thanks. You're a great friend." A faint blush coloured Gwen's cheeks at the praise, and then her grin widened. "Well, you're still my maid of honour. Let's see if you're still saying that when you see the bridesmaid's dress I've picked out for you." Marilyn barked a laugh, but something on Gwen's face made him suddenly very worried. "Wait, that was a joke, right? You were joking." When Gwen just turned and shut the door to the changing room, Marilyn's eyes widened. "Oh God, please tell me you were joking." Marilyn had meant to take Gwen's advice. He really had. But it was difficult to find a suitable way to work "Arthur, you're an insufferable arse, but I think I'm in love with you" into a conversation about the many and varied ways Marilyn failed at washing Arthur's socks. Arthur wavered between extremes. There were weeks when Arthur was running him ragged with chores all over town, and it was all Marilyn could do just to find time to sleep and eat, let alone have enough time to work out how to have the most difficult conversation of his life with the most difficult person he'd ever met. Then there were other times when it felt like Marilyn was on a 6-inch leash, and those were almost worse, because Marilyn barely had enough time to breathe before the next orders were out of Arthur's mouth. Marilyn was trying to be patient, but they hadn't found time to have coffee together in over a month, and hadn't had lunch together in even longer. Eventually, Marilyn just stopped asking. He hoped Gwen was right, and things would work themselves out in time. But when Will called and said he wanted to meet up for a business proposition and drinks, Marilyn was lonely and haggard and desperate for just a moment away. He said yes. Marilyn had learned his lesson by now, mostly, and limited himself to one pint for the night. He had worked through 3/4 of it so far, so Marilyn was pleasantly buzzed by the time Will finally confronted the topic they'd been dancing around all evening. Namely, the fact that Will wanted to offer him a job at the Aldor Enterprises. Once Marilyn picked his jaw up off the floor and recovered enough to speak, he stuttered out, "But I already have a job." Will scoffed into his beer. "I'm sure it's delightfully rewarding to run a bunch of pointless errands for Arthur bloody Pendragon. But at the Aldor, you'd be working with the civil engineers, making sure all their designs are as environmentally sound as possible. Don't tell me you'd rather skivvy for some pompous rich brat." Marilyn honestly didn't know how to answer that, so he didn't. Will sighed. "Look, Marilyn, I know this must seem to be coming out of the blue, but I've been thinking a lot about what you said to me the other night. That whole thing about fiscal versus environmental responsibility. And it may have been mixed quite liberally with a bit of drunken ranting, but I think you've got a point. I also think you've got the type of vision that Ealdor would need to make it work." Marilyn tried to wrap his brain around what Will had just asked him. It would be the opportunity of a lifetime, But when Merlin considered the fact that he would have to leave Arthur to do it, it became considerably less appealing. Merlin privately wondered why he felt such loyalty to a man who these days barely had time to look at him, much less speak a civil word. Hoping to deflect Will's attention as well as satisfy his own curiosity, Merlin asked, "What have you got against Arthur anyway?" Will glared morosely at the bar top. "I know him. I've dealt with men like him before. All he cares about is himself and getting ahead. And he doesn't care who he has to step on to get there." "Arthur's not like that. We're friends." Merlin frowned at his own words. More and more, he was beginning to doubt that it was true. Will voiced the thoughts Merlin wasn't willing to admit to having when he said, "You may think that now, but just wait. He won't think twice about throwing you to the wolves if it suits him." There was a sullen pause, and then Will continued tentatively, not really looking at Merlin. "Whatever he's paying you, I can offer you more." Merlin answered quietly, "It's not about the money, Will." Will's glass clunked down to the bar top with a bit more force than necessary. "Then what is it about, then?" Merlin sighed. How could he explain it to Will if he couldn't even explain it to himself? Even on a good day, his job left him miserable and exhausted. And then Arthur would look at him and grin at some private joke, and Merlin would think, "This is it. This is right where I'm supposed to be." Except that Arthur hadn't smiled at him in months. Taking a deep breath, Merlin said, "I trust Arthur. I believe in him. There's greatness in him, if you just know where to look." Will downed the last of his drink and frowned. "This is a chance for you to be great for yourself. Just think about it, all right?" Merlin held his gaze for a long time before he gave a small, reluctant nod. He kind of hated himself for even considering it, but 2 weeks later, he still hadn't said no. Merlin practically leapt out of the cab, tossed a fistful of money at the driver, and rushed through the doors to the hotel, frantically shouting into his phone, "Arthur, damn it, pick up! I know your phone's a piece of shit, but if you're not answering your phone because you're unconscious and trapped under something heavy, then why the hell did you dial me instead of emergency? Hold on, I'm here, so bollocks!" Merlin clicked his phone shut, giving it up as a lost cause. The lift ride seemed interminable. Merlin rode up 30 floors, his worry ratcheting skywards along with each cheerful blip of the lift as the numbers climbed. Images kept flitting through his mind, each one worse than the last. Just as Merlin's mind conjured up the image of Arthur bleeding to death all over the expensive oriental rug that Merlin hated, the lift doors opened and Merlin realised he'd been holding his breath for the last 10 floors. When Merlin burst through the door to the flat, he found Arthur face down, not in a pool of his own blood, but face down and getting the tension worked from his shoulders by Greta, his massage therapist. Merlin's dread flipped to rage so fast it was staggering. "By God, Arthur, I hope you're paralysed or dying from one hell of a Swedish deep tissue-related injury, or I swear I'll..." Arthur's smarmy voice interrupted Merlin's burgeoning rant. "Greta, I'm suddenly feeling a pain in my ass." Merlin's rage frothed and boiled over. "I thought you were dying, you prick!" For one murderous moment, Merlin very seriously considered the logistics of making that true. Greta apparently took the look on Merlin's face as her cue to flee the premises, and she rushed out of the flat like she was desperate to escape World War III, which, Merlin supposed, wasn't that much of a stretch. "Why the bloody hell would you think that?" Arthur said, glancing up at Merlin for the first time. "And what the hell are you wearing?" Merlin looked down at his shiny pink shirt and black tux, and the realisation that he had just run across town looking like the freakish love child of a penguin and Liberace only made him even angrier. "I was Gwen's maid of honour, all right? And don't you dare say anything about it, because all you're wearing is a towel. And you texted me saying you needed me right now in the middle of a wedding. And then you weren't answering your phone. And I thought, surely Arthur wouldn't call me out of Gwen and Lance's wedding unless it was an emergency. He's not that much of a bloody pillock. But clearly I was wrong. By the time Merlin was finished, he could feel how red his face had become, and he swore he was seconds away from having steam billow from his ears. All Arthur did was gawk at him, one hand holding the towel precariously low on his hips, and broad chest sprinkled with fine golden hair, and Merlin's life was so wretchedly unfair, because he was absolutely furious, and he should not want to jump Arthur for anything right now other than to punch his bloody daylights out. Arthur's gobsmacked voice brought Merlin's attention back to his face. You left a wedding. Why the hell did you leave a wedding? Merlin clenched his fists and said very slowly through gritted teeth, Arthur, why did you call me? Arthur, not seeming to sense that he was treading on seriously thin fucking ice, simply replied, I need you to take a look at my speech for the groundbreaking. Put in some of those environmental facts you've been spouting off at me ever since we met. And I need you to put together my knight costume for that environmental benefit you and Morgana are planning. You'll need one too, of course. Something servant-y. My God, Arthur, this couldn't wait. The benefit's 2 weeks away. Are you completely incapable of doing things for yourself? Arthur's dismissive eye roll grated on every single one of Merlin's already frazzled nerves. In case you've forgotten, Merlin, it is in fact your job to see to my needs. Merlin felt something inside him snap, and he heard himself say flatly, Not anymore, Arthur. Arthur's brows knit in confusion. What? Merlin took a deep, unsettling breath. I quit, he said, proud that his voice only wobbled a little. The only reason I took this job in the first place was to get you to preserve some of the land from your money-grubbing developers, and I've got that. So now I'm done. I can't take it anymore. Arthur was still looking at Merlin as if he'd suddenly started doing backflips across the room while professing his love for meat and big oil companies. You're serious? Yes, Merlin replied, surprised to find that he meant it. Consider this my 2 weeks' notice. Arthur gaped at him for a very long time. Then his jaw abruptly snapped shut in a scowl. No. Now it was Merlin's turn to be nonplussed. No. No. I forbid you to quit, Arthur said, lifting his chin imperiously, as if he could simply command Merlin to stay like some bloody royal decree. Merlin felt his rage once again bubbling to the surface. You've nowhere to go, no qualifications. Nobody will even consider hiring you. You're lucky to even have this job. It's not like avoiding oncoming traffic is something you can put on your CV. Before Merlin could think better of it, he opened his mouth and said, I've already been offered a job, Arthur. Arthur seemed even more shocked by this than he had by Merlin quitting. His voice was pitched so high he practically squeaked as he demanded, What? With who? Merlin swallowed, squared his shoulders and said, With Will. I had drinks with him the other night. He offered me a job as their environmental advisor. Arthur nearly collapsed into a nearby leather chair as if his legs had been knocked out from under him. Merlin was reluctantly grateful the towel stayed put, because he didn't think he could have this conversation with a naked Arthur and still escape with his sanity intact. When Arthur spoke, his voice was surprisingly cold. And what did you tell him? Merlin found himself matching Arthur's tone. I said I'd think about it, he replied, though I suppose I know what my answer is now. I suppose you do, Arthur said, clenching his fists. He stood and turned his back on Merlin as he stalked towards his room. You'll be telling him no first thing tomorrow morning, he called without looking back. Arthur, That's an order, he snapped, slamming the door. That night, Merlin didn't stay at the flat. He must have been quite a sight when Gwen opened the door to find him on her doorstep, because she took one look at him and pulled him into a hug. It may have been their wedding night, but Lance made up the guest bed without being asked. He'd never been more grateful for his friends in his life. When Arthur walked through the door to his office, Morgana was already there waiting. What the hell did you do to Merlin? Damn it, Morgana, Arthur snapped. Can't this wait? I haven't even been in the building for 10 minutes. Considering the first thing Merlin did this morning was turn in his resignation to Uther, I think 10 minutes is more than enough time for me to figure out you've been a bloody twat. Arthur spun on her so fast he nearly gave himself whiplash. He did what? He can't quit. I wouldn't let him. Morgana crossed her arms and gave him a cold glare. Yes, well, apparently he went over your head. So let me ask again. What the hell did you do? I didn't do anything, Arthur protested hotly. He's the one being unreasonable. I've given him a fantastic salary, free room and board, and now he decides to up and quit just because I've asked him to do his bloody job. Clearly you did something, Morgana countered. Merlin cares about you. Anybody could see that. He never would have put up with you this long otherwise. So, if even half of that dim-witted brain of yours is in proper working order, you'll do whatever you can to make him reconsider. Arthur wanted to tell her, not bloody likely. But by the time she left with a scathing glare in parting, Arthur could feel her words itching under his skin like a rash. Arthur felt very much like he walked into an episode of The Twilight Zone. The thought of Merlin leaving was unfathomable. He tried to imagine it, to really picture going about the rest of his day-to-day life from now on without Merlin's constant, irritatingly enthusiastic presence, and he just couldn't. Damn that man for worming his way into Arthur's life and shaking it up so thoroughly. If anyone had told Arthur a year ago that he would be friends with his completely incompetent idiot of an assistant, that he would harbour something like fondness for those gigantic ears and that dopey smile, he would have laughed in their face before promptly firing them for being quite clearly out of their mind barmy. But Merlin had become even more than a friend. He'd become indispensable. Clearly, Arthur was doomed to an eternity of having the worst possible assistant in history. Incredibly, he found he didn't exactly dread the thought of spending the rest of his life with Merlin at his side,